All right, this time tomorrow, 9 o'clock tomorrow, Nick Caserio, Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager, will be meeting with the media to discuss the 53-man roster. I would imagine, Seth, that Joe Mixon will be a major topic at the press conference. We're going to carry the press conference live here on Sports Radio 610. Nick Caserio meeting with the media tomorrow. Things to keep an eye on today, obviously the cuts that are going to come. Texans have to get down to 53 by 3 o'clock today. Per Adam Schefter, they are shopping Cam Robinson, or at least looking into possible trade scenarios for him. I don't know. Actively they're shopping him, but that's out there now. That's a thing to watch today as well.
I think the thing with Cam Robinson real quick is that I don't know. I've just seen some people kind of almost frame it like, oh, this is something the Texans are trying to do before final cuts. I think it's very likely that maybe they've talked to Cam Robinson and they're open to trading him, but it's something that could extend all the way till the trade deadline. Cam's on a one-year deal, and if Trent Brown is healthy and they feel like Trent Brown's ready to go, then they have a swing tackle that can play both sides, and then everything. So I don't think there's necessarily a level of urgency other than that right now is a time when some teams might really be thinking about it,
yeah.
But then they can keep any dialogue open right up through the trade deadline.
Yeah, I guess without knowing how the Texans view the numbers crunch with the roster, we don't know. You and I speculate about what the roster could look like. If they have a couple of guys, a few guys that they feel are just super tough cuts for them before 3 o'clock today, mm-hmm. then their urgency to move Cam Robinson might be amped up a little bit. We just don't know. But I think you're right. If he's on the team through 3 o'clock today, you're absolutely right. That does not close the door on trading Cam Robinson by any means.
Right, and it doesn't. And I think that this is the kind of thing that if it's leaked, it was probably an intentional leak, and that Cam Robinson is in on it. It's not a surprise to him. I'd be surprised if this is a surprise to him.
Yep. Will Anderson Jr. was on the Greenlight podcast. That's Chris Long's podcast. Chris Long sits down with folks, chats some football, does a great job. This was last Thursday. It sounds like they had this conversation because Will had just gotten off the practice field with the Lions. This was Will Anderson Jr. He's had a chance to go against Ariante Ursery quite a bit throughout camp. This is Will's impression on what he's seen from the rookie left tackle thus far.
How's the rookie Ursery?
He's strong.
He's making some headlines.
Yeah, he's strong, man. And before we even get to the football part of what he does on the field, I love his mindset and what he's about and who he wants to be. He wants to be the greatest at his position. He loves to learn. He loves to soak up knowledge. And I think it means everything to him because he pulls me and Daniil after practice to come talk to him. And I was like, if you want to be great, those are the things you're doing, especially somebody like Daniil, like that's been in the league, gets double-digit sacks, going against him every day. But, man, you talk about being a mauler on the field. CJ told me, I didn't even notice, but he was like, yeah, Tate texted me. He's like, I'm going to protect you. I'm going to kill for you, everything. Yeah. And that's what you have to have as an O-lineman. You have to have that type of mentality as an O-lineman, man. And he has all the tools to be one of the greats in his league.
Yeah, and we had played that clip from CJ last year where he told that story about Ariante saying, I'll die on that line for you, or whatever he said to him. I think when Shelby Coppedge asked Will during the game at half in the second half in the preseason game, she asked, are there any rookies that stand out to you? And Will Anderson brought up Ariante Ursery very, very quickly. And he's really been impressed with him. Daniil Hunter had said some very positive things about him when I talked to him at West Virginia. And I think the biggest thing, echoing what Daniil said and what Will said in that in-game interview is that he cares about his technique. And it's for a big guy. A lot of times when you're a big guy in college, you get away with just bullying guys and kind of manhandling them. That's not what Ariante Ursery does. I mean, he has that ability to bully guys, or at least in college he did. But he uses his hands really well. You can tell that he's working at his technique. He moves. He's deceptively fast is a weird word for an offensive lineman, but he covers a lot of ground deceptively effectively. And I'm really excited. I think he's, when you factor in his physical traits with everything that Will Anderson just said, I think he might end up being a really, really good steal as a second-round pick.
Yeah.
Remember the reports on Ariante Ursery from Daniel Jeremiah, I believe, said that some teams had him graded as a first rounder. Other teams thought he was a third or fourth rounder.
It was Todd McShay. It was Todd McShay. Yeah, I believe. Well, McShay was all over Ursary. So Jeremiah might have been too. I remember McShay saying what you're talking about right now.
Yeah. So I remember because my first impression of Ursary when I watched him was, I don't know, man, he looks kind of stiff. This was way back when during the college football season.
Yeah.
And then when I went back and watched him again leading up to the draft, I realized, oh, okay, wait, no, he moves a lot faster than it looks like he's moving.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's what happens with long-limbed guys, too. It's kind of like when you think that some of these centers in basketball aren't all that athletic, and you realize, oh, well, no, it's because they're running on a court also next to Steph Curry and whatnot, and because their limbs – they're covering so much ground with each step that they are actually a lot faster than you give them credit for. That's what Ariante Ursary is. He moves really well for a guy his size.
Yeah, no, he does. And it looks like the Texans, you know, after drafting lineman after lineman with high picks the last few years, looks like they got one right here with Ariante Ursary early on here.
I mean, I don't know if it balances out the universe or not, but Kenyon Green getting released by the Eagles yesterday. It's hard to get over that one, man.
Yeah.
when you had Kyle Hamilton sitting right there.
Yep.
And you trade down a couple spots and end up with an offensive lineman who's done nothing at all. And Kyle Hamilton's that's still a tough pill to swallow. But Ariante Ursary, I think he might be the real deal.
Here's how I sleep at night with that, Seth. And you know, nobody wanted Kyle Hamilton on this team more than I did.
Yeah.
This is how I sleep at night. I look at it as if they had drafted Kyle Hamilton in 2022. He would have somewhere along the way in that season made a game-changing play that would have moved the Texans from the number two pick, down to like the fourth or fifth pick, and they wouldn't have gotten C.J. Stroud.
That's a good point.
That's how I sleep at night. I don't know if it's – obviously, we'll never know if it's true, but that's how I sleep at night.
I think that's exactly what Nick had written down in his notes.
Yeah, I'm sure. All right,
Hamilton, too good to tank.
Too good. Yes. That's right. We need C.J. Stroud. Here's Will Anderson. Talked about Ariante Ursary, but this is Will Anderson talking with Chris Long about the Texans' offensive line in general. What's the biggest difference that you've seen?
You see them coming off the ball harder, executing even more, and the precision is just there, man. But they are way more grittier, man. Like Titus, he's done a really good job of stepping up, man, and getting those guys rolling in the pieces that they're added, man. Like some of these double teams, these crunches.
Yeah, you're feeling them.
You're feeling them, man. And I'm like, and you know, me and Titus had a little back and forth one day in practice, and I don't really usually talk in practice for like, but I'm like, hell yeah, let's go. Come on then. Like, you know what I'm saying? But like, that's what makes you great. Like that competitive edge that like keeps pushing you to be better, that keeps like, we can talk today. Okay, come on, let's go. Like, those are the type of days that you need, especially in camp, man. And like, I'm super proud of that group and to see where they're coming. I think Coach Cole is doing a really good job of like giving them that energy, man. Like you hear them in Indy yelling and screaming. Like,
that's what I'm doing, push-ups after practice one day. I'm like, oh, all right.
Yeah, man, it's cool to see.
They're way grittier. And this is yet another one where, you know, D'Amico, his answers about the offensive line have been words with ER at the end of it. You know, comparing it to last year, you know, just it's better, it's this, it's better at that. And I get mad listening to that. Like, what? Where was the grit last season? Should I?
Well,
do I need to just look forward, Seth, and just not look back at last year when it
I
comes
get,
to
well,
this?
I think that we've already acknowledged that, or, I mean, D'Amico is, like any rookie head coach, is going to make some mistakes. Any coach anywhere is always going to make some mistakes. No coach has a perfect year ever. You know, even if they win every game, they still made mistakes along the way.
Yeah.
D'Amico, as a young coach, is the most injurious mistake he made was hiring Bobby Slowick and I think Chris Strausser as the offensive line coach.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that weren't quite in line with the way that D'Amico operates.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it just comes from the top down. Kaylee and Popovich are blue collar dudes. You know, Slowick is not a blue collar dude.
No.
And Chris Strausser, the offensive line coach, always looked like a guy that was what he was, a guy who was contemplating retirement. Mm-hmm. There wasn't that same verve necessarily as Cole Popovich. I think Kaylee and Popovich are just more cut from the same cloth as D'Amico Ryans.
Yeah.
So that alone, I'm not saying that's all you need, but it does feel more like of a fit for the Texans and the way that D'Amico wants to operate than what they had before.
Yeah, it's just wild that the grit was such a major issue with a coach like D'Amico Ryans. You know, like that, of the thing that he might be that he would be able to recognize in a coach.
Right.
I would think it would be the grittiness. But he had a relationship with Slowick. I get all that. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And then there's also that element of you don't know what you don't know. Yep. And DeMeco spent a lot of time with the defense the last couple of years. This year in training camp, he's spending a lot of time with the offense.
He is,
so
yeah.
It's just one of those things. I think that it was going to take a year or two to right the course, but I think he's on the right course now.
Yeah. Last one from Will Anderson Jr. This is the one that was making the rounds. This is the one. This is the cut that Chris Long himself put out from that interview. What did you learn from the 2024 season?
Execution has been the biggest thing that we've talked about all offseason long, precision and execution. And CJ said something like, you have fun when you execute. And I wholeheartedly believe that, man. But, like, in these games, like, those teams that's winning the championships or winning the Super Bowl, they're executing at the highest level. Like, everybody is locked in. Everybody is detailed. Like, it's no room for error. And that's, like, the biggest thing that we took away from that. Like, it's no room for error. Like, everybody has to be locked in on their job all four quarters.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing for me. The one common trait amongst really good NFL head coaches – for me, there's different personality types that work. There's different styles and schemes that work. But there's a maniacal obsession with detail that you just don't get. And it has to be almost maniacal because you have to set standards that aren't like the normal human standards. And whether it's Tony Dungy or Bill Belichick or anybody else, they've all got very different personalities. At the end of the day, you need to execute the finer details better than your opponent, because all the teams are relatively equally skilled. You might have a few better skill possession players here or there, but you just, by being maniacally obsessive about the details and having guys that are that way, that's where you get your edge. And that, like, those are the things that come down to it in the fourth quarter. I think DeMeco's done a really good job of getting players that are kind of maniacal about that. And it's cool to watch because it's very much the exception, not the rule. That you get, I think the coolest thing about some of the impact players that the Texans have is that the best players on the team also seem to be really solid dudes. And I was talking to somebody the other day that had come, you know, he's been on a few teams in the NFL, and he's talking about the Texans versus other teams. And you know, there's a lot of other teams where it's the exact opposite, where the best players are also the biggest a-holes on your team.
Yeah.
And that's a rough place to be in, man. It's tough. It's like there's room for one or two divas, but when all your best players are concerned about numero uno and else, it's really tough to have a good environment. I think they've done a really good job of squashing that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, people weighing in on the text page about college courses. Seth and I each picked a college course to take that was a unique one from FBS schools here. So these are some courses people have been taking. Someone said, I took hip-hop philosophy at A&M, way harder than I expected. It's the only class I ever had to drop in college.
Oh, really?
Hip-hop philosophy. Wow. Yeah.
Well, a lot of those easier classes, the fun classes, sometimes the professors know that, oh, there's a lot of people who think they're going to take this and it's just going to be a walk in the park, and it does end up... It's kind of like running wind sprints, you know? If you go into, at least, I think people that played sports can appreciate this. Like, let's say you're supposed to run 1,600-yard wind sprints. If you go into it thinking like, oh, I'm in shape, this is no big deal. Oh, it comes up and bites you.
Yes.
But if you go into it knowing that it's going to be hard, then it's a lot of you're more prepared for it. People go into that thinking they're just going to breeze through those wind sprints, and then all of a sudden Jay-Z jumps up and kicks you in the
jump. That's right, Jay-Z.
Yeah.
I took the history of baseball when I was at Texas Tech. It was one of the hardest courses I took in college, and I bet I know why, because this is a dynamic you pointed out earlier in the show. I bet it's because the person signed up for that thing, and I'm a baseball fan. I'll do great in this class.
Yeah.
And it ends up, it's history of baseball. So it ends up being about how woven into the fabric of society baseball was back during the Great Depression and during World War II. And it turns into sort of
it's a history class.
It's a history adjacent. A lot of adjacent historical things that have nothing to do with baseball on the diamond, but they're woven. Baseball's woven into them because of the
time
frame.
But also, you know, the type of professor that might be teaching that class might be an old school baseball nerd, where it was kids. You got to appreciate this. Back in the day, every high school had at least one kid that could tell you every World Series champion, every league champion, every league MVP. He could remember the box score of a game from 2 months ago. Yeah. It was more about regurgitation of stats more so than it was, you know, thinking about things and analyzing things. And I would imagine that that professor might have a bunch of, he might pop a quiz on you where you got to remember what Babe Ruth's batting average was in the seventh year of his career or
something. I would
just
do
super arcane like
hell
that.
Yeah. All right. Football talk in this segment on Sports Radio 610, presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Up next, first-time head coaches disclose advice they've been given by other coaches and the biggest curveballs they've gotten early on in their careers. As a Texan fan, I loved hearing this curveball for another coach in the division. We will have that for you coming up next. I have Payne and Pendergast. You can text the show 713-572-4610. So The Athletic has an article yesterday where they interviewed the three first-time head coaches in the NFL. Liam Cohen, Kellen Moore of the Saints, Liam Cohen of the Jags, obviously. We all know Liam Cohen from... Right. Kellen Moore of the Saints, and then Brian Schottenheimer of the Dallas Cowboys. And they asked him several questions. It was really interesting. Like, what's the silliest thing you've seen? What's the best advice you've gotten? This one I liked for the Texans' sake. What's the biggest curveball you got hit with during OTAs or minicamps, and how did you adjust? And the answer for Liam Cohen, and I think this is going to be something they're managing all year, and I think this is an experiment that is going to ultimately fail. But the answer for the biggest curveball, Seth, for Liam Cohen was Travis Hunter. And Cohen said this, that was an organizational decision in terms of needing to make sure that, obviously from a coaching standpoint, we had enough support staff, player engagement, athletic training, because he's going to be playing a lot of snaps and doing a different deal. So let me stop right there. So that first sentence illustrates they are throwing a lot of resources at one guy.
Right.
One guy. Right. Okay, continuing. Sports science, strength and conditioning, everybody. Every single person had to be truly on board with taking on this situation and opportunity. And obviously, the opportunity and situation we're talking about is Travis Hunter playing both ways, maybe extensively, on offense and defense. Continuing. When you're talking about scheduling, that's a curveball and a half. Because you're saying, quote, okay, we've got to make sure he's getting X amount of days on both sides of the ball, but on those days he's not on one side, we're still making sure we're getting him in meetings on the other side. So talk about assistant coaches having to take some extra workload on. They don't get much of a break because if it's during special teams, he's not on a special teams unit, but there's going to be an offensive or defensive coach. I mean, Liam Cohen makes this sound like they're building a skyscraper here. I'll finish it out here and then get your thoughts. That took a lot of time to map out. It was a curveball, especially for a first-time head coach trying to put together a whole operation.
Yeah. A first-time head coach trying to manage an entire operation, and this is what you're – it feels like the classic example of just anybody in any field or endeavor where you just don't have the basics set up yet, but you're spending half your day planning how you're going to spend all your money after you make it big. You know, you're trying to reinvent the wheel when you still don't even know how to make an actual wheel. All of these things. And I love it. I love it because it's, if anything, it sounds like when they frame it that way, so also Travis Hunter can play what, like 10 or 15 snaps on defense?
Right.
You're doing all of this and bending over backwards before you've actually just gotten his feet wet as a pro football player. It's a lot, man. It's a lot. And it's a whiz kid, young GM.
Yes.
Every now and then it works out.
You know,
every now and then you get the Boston Red Sox back in the day. More times than not, they fall flat on their face and it becomes a story 30 years from now about how, you know, Gladstone, when he's the GM of the Giants, really learned a lot of lessons about that fiasco in Jacksonville back in the day.
Yeah. Well, then Gladstone has painted them into a corner with this experiment in two ways. One, what he gave up to get Travis Hunter. He gave up a Will Anderson level trade package to move up from 5 to 2 to get Travis Hunter. That's number one. Number two, and you only give up that package if you're going to play him both ways. He's not a great enough prospect on either side of the ball to justify giving up future ones
right.
to move up to get him. So that's number one. He's got to play both ways. Number two, the things Gladstone was saying about him in the introductory press conference where he's talking about how he's going to change the sport of football. He ain't going to change the sport of football by playing just corner or just wide receiver. And so, look, ultimately, if he can't physically take the toll, which I think is ultimately, like, at the end of the day, I think Travis Hunter is skilled enough to do both. I just don't think he's big enough to do both, that he can withstand the punishment of doing both. And I think that's ultimately where it's going to fail. So I don't think they're going to pigeonhole him into having to go out there and play hurt just to fulfill Gladstone's prognostication for him.
Yeah.
But they're not going to blow it up early, even if it's not working. Like, they are going to ride this thing into the ground, probably.
They traded for him as if he had already proven that he can be the one guy since platoon football became a thing.
Yes.
That they can play both ways in the NFL. That, like, it was already a done and proven deal. And you're right. The physical size part of it especially is huge. And you know, sometimes size gets overblown, but man, you're asking a smaller guy. I mean, he's got a slender frame. He doesn't, you know, it's not like he's short and stout. He's got a slender frame. And to go out and play a really, really physical brand of football, much more so than the Big 12, and to do it 100 snaps per game, it just, physiologically, it just looks like one of those things where, nope, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
No. He missed two of the preseason games because he had a chest injury. Like, it's
right.
It started off, and I know when I would say that, there'd be, you know, we must have a Jag fan or two that listen to the show, like, or just somebody who thinks that I'm making a big deal out of something. But I have people say, you're making a big deal out of this. Like, he is a rookie. He needs the reps.
We're talking about a guy who's expected to be the most durable player in NFL history.
Yeah.
That's the expectation put on him by the GM.
Yeah, that's
he
right.
will be the most durable player in NFL history.
If he pulls it off, yeah.
Where does missing two preseason games, conservative approach or not, factor into that? Yeah. If he's going to be the most durable player in NFL history by virtue of playing both sides of the ball, 100 snaps a game, whatever it might be, like, how does missing two preseason games, your rookie year,
yeah.
the healthiest you'll ever be in your entire life, okay. where does it factor in there?
Okay, so the Texans play the Jags in week 3 in Jacksonville and week 10 here. Week 3 in Jacksonville, will Travis Hunter still be playing both? In week 3, will he be playing both
ways? Yes, he'll be playing both ways in week 3.
In week 10.
By week 10, Liam Cohen will have had a press conference where he says, you know, we wanted to give it a go and see what happened, but sometimes you have to readjust, and that's where we are with it. I wonder if part of this, too, is that, you know, Travis Hunter had said before the draft that he really wanted to play both ways.
Yep.
I wonder how much some of it is just maybe placating their young draft pick who came to one of the smaller NFL markets, all of that. And Travis Hunter, he's not like a diva or anything.
Yeah.
I don't know if that even mattered to him or not, but maybe some of that is just kind of, you know, placating his desires, and he needs to learn for himself that, okay, we got to put one foot in front of the other. Baby steps first.
It's an interesting hypothesis. If they hadn't traded up for him and he fell to them at 5, I would agree with that more. That they traded up to get him, I mean, he to justify that cost, he either has to be a Pro Bowler on one side of the football or be a contributor on two sides of the football.
And the GM did tell us that he was going to redefine expectations and what it all means. Yeah,
we have a little.
We're going to have to reevaluate ourselves existentially because that's how great Travis Hunter is going
to
be.
Thank you to the texters. We have a little bit of news which kind of impacts the Cam Robinson rumors that are out there, or reports from Schefter that the Texans are shopping Cam Robinson. Trent Brown released by the Houston Texans. So I guess he didn't practice at all during the preseason. Yeah. He was on the PUP list.
Yeah, and I didn't want to be a jerk about it or pessimistic about it, but he's a guy who's well into his 30s, who's a giant human being who's coming off of a patellar tendon tear.
Yeah.
And there's not a real vast history of offensive linemen coming back awesomely from patellar tendon tears. So it would have been nice if it worked out. I don't fault them for bringing him in. It sounds like he worked with the rookies really well and was a good teacher out there. But I think they knew when they signed him that it was just a classic. Get the guy in the building and see how he progresses.
Brent in the Heights texts in, Trent Brown released. Don't see how they trade Cam Robinson now, or am I crazy? I would say the chances of them moving on from Cam Robinson have gone down, the percentage chance he gets moved, but I don't think anything's out of the question. Like, there's going to be other tackles out there that are that become available through the cutdowns here. The Texans might bring in somebody who's not $12 million a year to be a swing tackle.
Well, you know? I mean, it's not news to the Texans that they were going to cut Trent Brown.
Right.
So that part of it, the report of Cam Robinson getting floated, when the Texans, whenever that was leaked intentionally or not, the Texans knew they were going to cut Trent Brown. So I think with the Cam Robinson trade, I think the price, the Texans might be willing to be very patient with it if it happens at all. But that they might just right now be saying, well, look, if we get a really good price,
sure,
we're going to do it. And, you know, just hope that Blake Fisher looks more like he did in the second preseason game than he did for a lot of the first part of training camp.
If you had to guess, is Cam Robinson still a Houston Texan when 3:01 p.m. today rolls around?
Yeah.
I think so, too.
I think it's going to be an ongoing situation.
Yep.
And, you know, maybe it might have been with a request from Cam Robinson himself.
Maybe.
That they maybe try to find a trade partner. But I don't think Casario at this point right now would have any real, like, a burning desire to trade Cam Robinson unless it was for if they could get a third rounder or something for him.
Yep, we're getting questions on the roster rolling in here. And by the way, keep it tuned to Sports Radio 610 all day long. When news breaks, we will we'll react to it here on the station. I don't want to speak for the other shows, but I feel like In the Loop is going to react to stuff they see that the Texans do roster-wise here. I think that's safe to assume. Who do we have for running back since Joe Mixon is out? Nick Chubb, Woody Marks, Damian Pierce. In that order for me.
And Dari Ogunbowale.
And Dari Ogunbowale, yeah. And I think that would be my order that I would dole out the touches. Damian is probably still a little rusty. Dari, I think, is a break glass in case of emergency guy, maybe a third down guy to come in there and catch some balls. I think you got a little bit of juice with Nick Chubb and Woody Marks as the top two guys.
Yeah, I guess. And I don't know. I don't know if I would even put a hierarchy on it, just because I think Damian Pierce is more of a first and second down guy, and Dari Ogunbowale, Woody Marks is a little bit more of a passing down guy.
Mm-hmm.
But not that he can't be used on first down. I think he's got a lot more value as an all-purpose back than you would think by his body size or body weight. But I think ideally, you look at Chubb and Marks as kind of like Montgomery and Gibbs up in Detroit. That there's you've got a bigger guy, you've got a smaller slasher type, and you kind of use them complementary fashion. But Damian Pierce, I don't think they want Nick Chubb to necessarily get a boatload of carries.
Yeah.
So that's where it's like Damian is second string behind Chubb for what they want to use those types of guys for.
Yeah.
But your overall second guy is Woody Marks.
I agree with that. There's a
1A and a 2.
We're going to start to see some names trickle out. Trent Brown is the first one. When you see him, text in, because we're keeping an eye on our phones, but we're doing a show. So keep eyes on it for us here on Sports Radio 610. All right, up next, final segment. Yordan Alvarez coming back for the Astros. I don't know if it's been officially announced yet, but all signs point to him coming back. This does create a bit of a conundrum for something the Astros have had the luxury of doing since Yordan went out back in early May. We'll tell you what that is. Also, I'm going to have Seth guess at who the audience thinks would be the best person to represent the station running a mile. I've got that poll up right now. We'll do that coming up next. Man, my whole timeline is Trent Brown getting cut, Cam Robinson getting shopped around in trades. Now, I will say that the timestamp on the Cam Robinson trade rumor tweets precede the news that Trent Brown was just let go from the Houston Texans. So there is that. But Aaron Wilson has some good information here, Seth, on Cam Robinson's contract, if indeed they're still shopping him. Although the max value is $14.5 million, there's a $2 million guaranteed base salary. Most of the money was in the $8.75 million signing bonus.
Yeah.
So the Texans have already scratched out a check for $8.75 million. So that contract becomes very tradable. You know, you're only talking about having a few million bucks left that would need to be.
Right.
So in essence, if we're looking at this as the Texans, if they were to make a move, potentially buying a draft pick by picking up some of the freight, they've already picked up a big chunk of the freight.
Right,
Cam Robinson.
And that's where I think because people, like, when the information comes to them, they kind of put it in a sequence of almost like the I don't think Trent Brown getting cut has one bit of an effect on whether or not Cam Robinson is – on the trade block, or if the Texans are exploring a trade. They knew they were going to cut Trent Brown. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like they floated the idea of a Cam Robinson trade,
yeah.
And then 3 hours later were like, oh, you know what?
Yeah.
We better cut Trent Brown. Never mind. No Cam Robinson
that's
sale
right.
today. So I think that is what it is if they're floating the idea for a trade. But it also doesn't mean that it has to come by the final cut deadline. It could be between now and the trade deadline. But they know that if you get that information out right now, there's a lot of teams that are shuffling their rosters and around and trying to figure it out. So now's a ripe time to do it. But it's not I would be surprised if it was a deadline per se.
It's going to be a fun afternoon, man, just to see. I mean, I don't remember a back end of the roster that I've spent more time thinking and speculating about than this year's Texans, which is wild because the top 40 to 45 guys on this roster are pretty rock solid football players. You know,
it's a good place to be.
Yeah,
it's nice to feel bad about, you know, Cecil Shorts on our Believe in Texans podcast yesterday asked me, what's a surprise cut that you think might happen? And I'm looking at it from the outside looking in. I think people outside of Houston would be really surprised to hear how we talk about Dare Ogunbowale, because I think the Texans really like Dare Ogunbowale.
They do.
And they love his versatility. They love what he does on special teams. He does everything the right way. And yet you're balancing that out versus the fact that you're kind of bloated, even with Joe Mixon being injured. You're a little bit bloated with some of the younger guys that you might feel good about. I don't know if Jawar Jordan clears waivers. And, like, I think Jawar Jordan, if he gets cut, or not waivers, but if Jawar Jordan gets cut, I don't think it's as simple as just putting him on practice squad again this year.
No, he'd have to clear waivers. He's on his rookie deal. Yeah,
like, there's a chance that there's a real good chance, given how he looked in the preseason,
maybe,
that somebody picks him up.
Yeah.
So that's where the really hard decisions are. I told him Dare Ogunbowale. I don't think they will cut him, which makes it a surprise if they do. But I can see, objectively looking at it, Dare Ogunbowale is not. You know, at least on paper, people don't think about him the same way perhaps we do.
The surprise, I'll give you a surprise cut for me, and then we'll get to Yordan Alvarez. Danico Autry. I would be surprised if they just moved on from Danico Autry. Now, they just moved on from Trent Brown, who right now, in terms of availability, profiles exactly the same as Danico Autry, which was totally unavailable for all of camp. And there's a lot more money to save with Danico Autry's contract than there was with Trent Brown's little $3 million deal. Yet, it would still surprise me because, A, they've got the PUP list as a mechanism to kick the can down the road, and, B, we know they love Danico Autry.
And Danico Autry, I mean, the big difference is that Danico Autry's a good football player and has more recently been a good football player.
Yeah.
So, and Trent Brown's a guy in his 30s who's coming off of a patellar tendon tear. I think that they just... I'll be surprised. I think we know how much D'Amico loves defensive linemen, but that's a possibility. I think there's a lot of guys like that on the defensive line where D'Amico Autry, Derek Barnett, guys that you really like, at some point it just might become a numbers and salary crunch that you can only have so many 30-plus-year-old defensive linemen on the team.
What about a guy like Foley Fatakasi, who's on a one-year deal right now? He signed kind of midway through the offseason. It's like 1 year, $5 million. He was injured to start training camp. He's been injured for for a big chunk of his short Texans career. He's been hurt. Productive player, but he's been hurt a lot. And if it comes down to, Seth, it might come down to Foley Fatakasi or Tommy Togiai. And Tommy Togiai's had a really good camp, praised by D'Amico Ryans for his consistency. Again, these are surprise cuts, so none of them are high probability. I'm just kind of throwing names out there.
I'm guilty of, even though, as I know we're talking about, it would be a surprise, I'm like, no, this surprise cannot happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's okay. And those three we've mentioned. Who did I mention first? Ogunbowale.
Yep.
And then Danico Autry and Foley Fatakasi.
Yeah.
I might power rank the likelihood as Foley Fatakasi, Danico Autry, Dare Ogunbowale.
Yeah, I think Dare. I locked in Dare a week ago. I don't think Dare is getting cut.
Damian Pierce would be the other surprise cut. Somebody just texted me that. Somebody I respect, and I think that's I think that might be in the cards still too. I do think it would be a surprise cut. But again, talking about that logjam, if I have to choose between, hey, what's the upside of Jawar Jordan versus Damian Pierce right now? I think Jawar Jordan might have more upside.
He's got more pop, that's for sure, in camp, you know, and I love Damian. And they love Damian too. So, okay, a couple other cuts from the Texans. Looking at Aaron Wilson's timeline. Tight end Irv Smith, sidelined with a sprained ankle. He's getting cut. He could be headed for injured reserve, possibly. Okay. But Irv Smith out.
Well, I guess, he can't be cut and put on injured reserve unless that's the simultaneous.
Well, yeah, they're releasing, okay. Right. I'll read the tweet verbatim. This is what Aaron's saying. Texans releasing veteran tackle Trent Brown and tight end Irv Smith, sidelined with sprained ankle, could be headed for injured reserve. So I don't know if, I wish Aaron had worded it differently. Yeah. Anyways, it looks like Irv Smith might not be in the plans for week one. Arthur Millette released by the Texans.
Okay, so, there was a person of intrigue because he'd made some plays in the preseason.
Yep, they're releasing him. They signed him to a one-year deal kind of during camp, so he's been released as well. So we'll keep an eye on things throughout the day here. Yordan Alvarez is expected back, Seth. Here's a luxury that the Astros will no longer have if Yordan Alvarez is back today. Jose Altuve's splits on where he has played this season go as follows. 46 games at second base, 45 games in left field, 42 games as the designated hitter. A third of the time he's played, he's been the designated hitter. For most of the season, Yordan Alvarez has been out. The Astros have been able to park Jose Altuve, who's not good at any of the defensive positions they ask him to play. They've been able to park him as the DH. That goes away starting today for the most part.
And then to add to that, they're loaded with good defensive infielders right now. Mm-hmm. You don't want to lose their defense.
He'll be the
I didn't want to think about this stuff.
If Yordan is in the lineup tonight, he'll be the DH and Jose Altuve will be the left fielder. That's what the plan was coming into the season.
Yeah, and Altuve hasn't been good in left field. It still doesn't hurt you as much as frequently as when you're not good at second base.
The one thing that concerned me about moving him to the outfield and giving him a 5-year contract extension is that odds are the baseball gods will catch up to him. And by, the fourth or fifth year of that contract, his offense will not be nearly good enough to where it justifies him playing anywhere in the field. That hasn't happened yet. Jose Altuve is still a very good offensive player. He hits for power. His average has been, 270, 280 for most of the last couple, is where it sits right now. He was one of the best hitters in baseball in the month of July. So I'm fine with Altuve in left field. Does it get a little nerve-wracking when the ball gets hit deep towards the wall with Altuve out there? Yes. But I remind myself he's hit 22 bombs or whatever it is, and he bats 280, and we love Jose Altuve. He's just such a lovable fella. That's what I'm willing to live with. That's where we are, man.
I don't know. It's a cautionary tale about sentimental contracts. A couple of years from now, I think that might be what you end up feeling about it. But
who do you think is winning the poll? I'll read the question. Pender poll. Pretend the Marconi Award for best station in the country will be decided by which of the five station finalists has an on-air talent run the fastest mile. Who should represent Sports Radio 610? Who do you think is leading the poll right now?
Why don't you read the names?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. I picked one from each show. Yeah, sorry about that. Seth Payne, Reggie Atatula, Clint Sterner, Sean Bajani. Those are your four choices.
I think Sean Bajani is winning. A lot of listeners might not realize that Sean Bajani has built, he's got a better build for distance running than the rest of us.
He's a skinny fella, yeah. Sean Bajani, third, 22%.
Third.
Yeah.
Is Reggie number one?
Yes.
You're damn right I am.
Yeah.
So is somebody else.
Clint. Are they tied? Me?
You're tied with Reggie Atatula right now.
Yeah.
This can only be decided by a literal runoff.
31%. Yeah. Well, we still got like 22 hours left.
I'll tell you honestly, Clint should be offended.
16%. This is a really even poll. Like Clint is in last at 16%, and y'all two clowns are at the top of the heap at 31%.
I don't know. Honestly, Clint should be offended that I'm ahead of him. I don't know, man. Clint still, like, maybe when people look at Clint, Clint still lifts weights heavy. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of barrel chested more so than me, where I'm starting to look like a feeble old English gentleman. I think that people don't realize that Clint's still a, you know, I still outweigh him by 40 pounds or so, probably. And I don't know.
No.
Maybe I'm not confident.
You
enough.
Outweigh. We said earlier they do their weigh-in every Monday.
Oh yeah, what's he weigh?
He's weighing 240. Right now.
Oh. Oh, all right. I only outweigh him by 10 pounds.
Right.
Oh, all right. I might have a shot here.
For some reason, it feels like you think you...
They just look so different.
But for some reason, Seth thinks he's on a staff with some school's cross-country team. I don't know why you're so resistant to thinking you might finish first in this thing.
Okay. I know. Well, Reginald still has... Reginald and Bajani, I don't think... I think they would dust me. I think they would.
Do you?
Reginald plays basketball a lot still. Yeah. So
yeah. He plays a lot of hoops.
I voted for Sean Bajani over Reggie only because Reggie told me once he doesn't like to run.
I hate running.
Yeah.
I hate running for leisure. This is a survival mechanism. This is not a leisure activity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why my cardio is mostly basketball because I'm I'm running for a purpose.
Well, I can tell you right now, if you were running for that Marconi and you didn't finish first, we would all be waiting for you to come back to the to the crowd here, and we would shun you.
And survival, right? That is survival.
It's Marconi survival. Yeah. Is what that is. Yeah.
I might have to hit the track this weekend. I gotta buy a new.
Yeah, time it out, man.
Before I do that, it's gonna be rough.
Okay, so one other thing, real quick. By the way, Crosstalk brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing. So I told Reggie and John this, Seth. So I had a listener who actually lives in my building. Text me on Sunday morning about his fantasy football league and what they do to punish the last place finisher.
Yeah.
They make the last place finisher run a beer mile, which is 4 laps around a track, and you have to chug a beer before each lap.
Oh, okay.
So by the, by the 3rd and 4th lap, you've got 3-4 beers inside of you. You're probably catching a buzz. You might not be in great shape to begin with. We don't know who the person's going to be, obviously, because you got to play out the season.
Yeah.
But he wanted me to put a line, like an over-under, on how long a beer mile would take, not knowing who the loser in the league is going to be.
I bet the first 2 laps feel incredible. The second lap, especially.
Yeah.
By the second lap, you're starting to feel it a little bit. Even you're not going to be as waterlogged and everything. I bet like 200 meters into the second lap, you feel the best you've ever felt in your entire life.
Right.
You think you're Steve Prefontaine.
Yes.
And it's that third beer that's really going to – I don't know if it – I think it'd be hard for somebody who's in good shape to run that third lap in under 2 minutes. So I'm thinking like two – even if you're a good runner – the second and third lap, plus you factor in how long it takes to chug a beer.
Well,
keep 10 minutes at least, right?
No, dude, I put the number at 20, 25 and a half. because there's a chance the last place finisher might be somebody who's not in any sort of running shape.
Yeah.
You know, it's the...
And drinking.
Yeah, but if you walk 4 miles an hour, you know...
Who walks four miles is a brisk pace.
It's a brisk pace, but you can walk briskly. Yeah, So that's without even trying all that hard, though... You can walk a mile in 15 minutes.
Again, I asked him how many people in this league are just not in shape. They're fat. And he said half the league is fat.
So it also comes down to how fast you drink a beer. And you got to stop and drink, and you might vomit.
You know, there's
okay,
that.
So we might be starting off at like 12 minutes is almost like the low bar for time. Or
the
high 12
minutes.
Yeah.
I asked AI when he asked me to set this, and the average beginner runner runs a mile in 12 to 15 minutes.
Okay, and then you're adding the beer to it.
Yes.
And a lot of these guys sound like they're the average beginning runner is probably also on average already in better shape than some of the people in there. Usually if you don't exercise at all, you're a beginning elliptical rider.
That's why,
or something.
Hence 25 and a half felt about
okay,
right.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a good job. Good approach, Sean.
Thanks. I was doing it while sitting at breakfast with my wife. She was not super happy with me as I had a pen out and I'm Googling on my phone. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, Adam
it's
called
important.
Me.
It's important.
This is important work.
Unlike whatever you're saying right now.
Speaking of which, what is the question of the day?
Wait, can I read this text before we get there? Because it's more pursuant to what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
I appreciate this from the 409 because I think I might agree. If we're changing the rules of the race to a beer mile, T-Mill comes up on the board now.
Our thing. Yeah. 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 Beer mile. I think he shoots up to number 1.
Could do it backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll do 2 beers to keep the other stations in the hunt.
T-Mill's like an 80s heavy metal band member.
Yeah.
He's got a certain type of endurance, I think.
Start throwing bleachers,
or
breaking
Flair.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Question of the day.
Question of the day.
If your life was over the 53-person roster limit,
okay,
who would you cut And that's at work or at home. You got to cut someone from your life.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah. At work, at who are you cutting?
I feel like I've already done that with a few people in my life.
Sean knows who
your
my
current
answer
roster.
Is,
yeah. I know exactly who Seth's answer is. Exactly who it is. It's neither of
it's
you.
Nobody at 6'10". It's nobody at 6'10".
It's nobody at 6'10".
I would understand. Like, I am anticipating myself being the answer for at least some people because, you know, last man in, first man out. Yeah.
There's one or two people that wind up at establishments that I frequent sometimes, mm-hmm. regulars, that I'm like, yeah, I could cut this. But it's probably people I see frequently because I go to some establishments here. Yeah. Probably people there. Yeah.
I'd cut my sister-in-law.
Yeah, I was waiting for that one.
Okay. Yeah, she's kind of a waste of space. I mean, she is.
So is this Jan's sister?
Maybe.
Okay. Why are you bashful now?
Do you have a fun relationship with her where she would think this is funny if you said it? No, you're just coming out with it.
No, she's awful. Just a waste.
You know what? Jeez. This honestly, and sometimes it's not possible to do this because it's a family member or something, but there's any kind of compulsive liar in your life, like, you got to realize that they're never going to change. Like, it doesn't, like, they're not fixable. And as much as you can, you just got to cut that person out because they're so damaging. Like somebody that will compulsively lie without even thinking about it. Like their knee-jerk reaction is a lie. Mm-hmm. And to talk, like claim people said things and everything. Like you just, there's no appropriate tact you can take to that person where it gets any better. So you just got to, cut those people out of your lives.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's difficult. That's why, as one of my live stream members told me, that's why she emigrated to America. It was because of that. But if you can't emigrate, at the very least, distance yourself as much as possible.
There you go. Yeah, just to be clear, if you're listening right now, because I have some listeners that hang out at my establishment.
It's not you.
You're listening. It's not you.
If you can hear me saying this.
Right. No, I have a specific person in mind who I know does not listen to the show. But they're probably, because I hang out at Lizards a lot, they're probably one of the 53 people that I see the most.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
None of you guys. We've got a good squad right now.
We have
man.
A good squad.
Yeah, we got a good squad.
I wouldn't know. Maybe if you extended it to Odyssey, you could.
Wow.
Around the building?
Yeah.
I need to know who that answer is.
John, who is it? Yeah. Now, since you're in the mood.
All right. So you have a spot you got to do, right?
Yeah.
And you get noticed 5 minutes before it airs.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever that person is.
Yeah, fair enough.
I don't even know who that person is, but they say, hey, you got to record this spot. It's starting to run at 10 a.m.
Oh.
It's 9:30 a.m.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoever that person is.
If you knew this, I got a show to get ready.
You know what, Lopez? That's where, because I think we all have that same issue sometimes, because a lot of times the salespeople.
I don't know who it is.
Right. But sometimes salespeople have that personality of like they're bad at the administrative side of things. And I can never get angry at any of them because I've got the exact same issues. So I can't, whenever somebody doesn't do something well administratively, I catch myself because I know I'd be twice as bad in that circumstance.
Text
Whereas
message.
You, a mature and responsible adult, you have reason to be angry.
Okay.
You guys are going to get some funny texts for this thing.
Oof. There we are.
Yeah, you're going to get some good ones. Someone's texting. I love Lopez's brutal honesty. John's not messing around.
No,
man.
She does nothing.
Does your sister-in-law know that you feel that way?
Probably. Yeah.
Well, considering the way that you let that go, I have a feeling you.
When was the last time you saw her?
Well, she always asked to come for Christmas, and I'm like, nah.
Wow.
We offered to get her a hotel.
Where does she live?
Man.
I can't say.
Oh, okay. Oh my God!
Where does she live and work?
It's awesome.
What's her face?
What's her Facebook? What's her name? Yeah.
Yeah. What's her name? Rhyme with
friend her on Facebook. I'm gonna be like, I feel your pain. All right, fellas, this is gonna be fun. Antibodies to you, Seth Payne.
Yes, antibodies, and hopefully the Texans don't cut you today.
Yeah.
Head on a swivel, Sean. Head on a swivel.
Yeah, head on a swivel.
Head on a swivel with your sour cream skin. Yeah.
Mayonnaise. It was mayonnaise, all right?
It's more sour cream, to be honest. But, yeah.
Listen to you. Oh, you jerk. I'm cutting Seth Payne.
I'm cutting Seth Payne.
Knew it was coming.
Just like
cutting
that.
Cutting Seth Payne. Hey, well, thanks
the
for making it easy,
final preseason game made the difference.
I'm not going to trade him. I'm cutting his ass.
Last cut. Yep. Just to get you down to 53.
Last cut. He's going to get me down to 53. I might cut him twice to get down to 52. How do you like that?
All right. Remember when Belichick, or when, what's his name's first year? Bill O'Brien's first year? There was like one day in the offseason where he started firing coaches and cutting veteran players and everything. And I half was looking at my phone to see if they were going to cut me again, even though I'd been out of football for 10 years.
That's great.
I was like, I don't think anybody's safe here. Cutting anybody and everybody that's been associated with the Texans.
Oh, my God. All right, Crosstalk brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing. You're listening to KLT AM, KLT FM HD2, Houston, an Odyssey Sports Station.